Another week of baseball is in the books, so let's talk about it. What's going on, everyone? Again, sounding a little different now because Dylan's not here to be the typical host. So Nico's taking over the hosting role. We're talking about the weekend that just happened, and I'm here with Harry. Haven't been on in a minute, typical Reds fan, but how you
Yes,
doing?
sir. Doing
Also got
great.
Lucas on. Little guess he's come on a couple of times, like once or twice. He talked about the Hall of Fame with us, but they're a Giants fan, kid just knows ball. How you doing, bro?
Doing pretty good. Excited to talk about why the Giants are the next big thing in baseball.
Nice. Well, we're not going to talk about them first. First thing we're going to talk about, we're going to start with the AL East. AL East is looking good. We have, again, Yankees sitting at top. No surprises there with the Orioles one game back. But this week, they're going into a four-game set. At the end of this week, I got to ask you guys, who do we think's up top? Do we like the Yankees? Do we like the Orioles? What do you guys think?
I mean, Yankees are a game up right now, so they have to, if they split the four games, they're still on top. I like them to split the four game series. I think, I mean, early on in this in the season, they've looked really good, and Judge is gonna get going. He has looked horrible. Granted, like he's looked worse than the numbers even say, but he's a great baseball player. He's going to get going. I do think there's probably some lingering stuff with that toe that he said he's going to have to manage for the rest of his career. But he's Aaron Judge. He's going to start playing good baseball.
Yeah, if I had to give a prediction for the next, four, I would probably I think the Orioles they're doing all right. Little sneak preview of who my player of the week's going to be, but Gunnar Henderson's been absolutely raking recently. I feel like I mean, obviously Aaron Judge is incredible. I think even in what's been widely considered as one of kind of his coldest stretches, he's still statistically a decently above average player, which just kind of shows his dominance. I think he'll eventually snap out of it, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's going to happen right now. I'm just going to kind of ride the wave there, and I'll say the Orioles are going to try to usurp the Yankees here, even though in the long term the Yankees will be just fine.
Yeah, one thing to look at is their pitching matchups. I think Corbin Burns against Luis Gill is going to be a very interesting thing to watch because it's kind of the guy who's been the young star, like hot hand for the Yankees against Corbin Burns, which every single time Corbin Burns is on the mound, he's going to deal. I think that no matter how this goes, I think kind of with Lucas, I think that maybe if I had to guess, it'd be a split. I think that maybe the Orioles take Grayson and Corbin's games, and then the other two they fall. I think they may stay in first after this, but I think that it's going to be like this the whole year. I think that really with how it's shaping up with how the Red Sox have gotten like injured and we really didn't expect a lot from them. The Blue Jays seem to be disappointing and the Rays are going to be the Rays. We'll see how they end up. It's going to be these two people going at it the whole year. So I think that not only is this series, but the whole season going on, it's probably going to be just a back and forth. And like, I think that this may end up being just even the whole series. Transitioning, Lucas, you said it perfectly. Judge hasn't been, again, he's been above average, like Harry, like you said, but he hasn't been the Judge that we're expecting. And on the other side, on their rivals, I gotta pat my boy. O'Neill's been red hot. Had two bombs, had a walk off this weekend. He's been on a tear for the Red Sox. So I don't know if this is my Red Sox bias, but I want to know what's more likely. Aaron Judge misses the All-Star game, or Tyler O'Neill makes it.
The All-Star game isn't about who's played the best necessarily. It's kind of a popularity contest. I don't see a scenario in which Aaron Judge misses the All-Star game. He's been one of the faces of baseball for the last 6 or 7 years. O'Neill's been a fourth outfielder, kind of third outfielder type for the last 5 years. Now, O'Neill's a great start the year. I think he's got nine bombs already on the year, and he's carrying that Red Sox lineup. But a 2 week stretch where he goes 3 for 25 and Judge hits two home runs and gets posted on MLB Instagram and everyone goes wild. And you're going to see Judge getting more votes than O'Neill, even with his numbers not being nearly as good thus far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be honest. I thought this was just a throwaway. I just wanted to talk about how Tyler O'Neill was raking. Because again, like you said, Devers has been kind of off and on, especially because he's been hurt. Costas broke his rib, and I just wanted to give him some love. I could have given him love in the MVP, but I wanted to spend the whole topic about it. Transitioning to the AL Central, you've got the people I've been in first the whole time. Guardians 8-2 in their last 10, swept the A's, beat the Sox, and beat the Braves in the series. And then you have in second place, you have the Royals. So I kind of want to pose this both ways because I think, again, it seems like to me, but if you guys want to chime in, that the Guardians kind of have this, it's kind of theirs to lose at this point. They seem like they've been playing the best baseball. What I want to transition to is more the Royals in second place because they've looked really good. They've looked very exciting, I could put it. Are we buying or selling the Royals as a playoff team?
Buying.
You want to elaborate, or you just want to say buying, and we can go to the next topic, and this will be a 30-second pod.
Mean, I can elaborate. I think they're young, they're exciting. They have Bobby Witt, who's awesome. And I don't think the Guardians are nearly as good as their record has shown this year. I read a stat last night, I think it was, that the Guardians had three hits in the eighth inning with an exit velocity of 30 miles an hour or lower. That doesn't happen. Those bunts are not gonna end up being base hits. They're not gonna be a team with like a 700 winning percentage. I think they're an 84, 85 win team. And I don't necessarily think the Royals are any worse than that.
That's I okay, so we're selling on the Guardians. It's low key. Harry, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna take the inverse. And even though I'm not necessarily as bullish on the Guardians as well, no one's really bullish on the Guardians. I just kind of have the same opinion of the AL Central as I feel like I've had in the past 5 years, and that there still really isn't any team that I would say is too fantastic. I think with the Royals, one of the biggest things is I think they rank fourth in team ERA this year. However, when you kind of compare that to their overall kind of more predictive numbers, their FIP, I think, is league average at best. Obviously, like Brady Singer is awesome, and he's one of the most electric young pitchers in the game. But I think that they've also seen a lot of just kind of they've seen a lot of what's exactly the word? They've just kind of overperformed what I think that they're truly capable of, especially like a guy like Seth Lugo, who I'm looking here is like a 1.7 ERA compared to like a 5.0 xFIP. And it's just like, I think that in due time, those numbers will kind of balance out, even though their bats are really fun to watch. The Guardians, I mean, I'm just kind of they're fun, they're all right, but I'm not that's not a team that I'm planting my flag as, one of the top teams in baseball to look out for. It's just kind of a very murky division at it all, as it kind of always seems to be.
I mean, you talk about looking at the expected stats. The Guardians have the lowest barrel percentage in baseball, the second lowest hard hit ball percentage in baseball, and
Oh
the
no,
third
yeah.
lowest team exit velocity in baseball.
Oh, I'm not high on the
They
Guardians
don't
at
hit the
all.
ball hard. How are they going to score enough runs to make the playoffs?
I'm not high on either team, is what I'm saying.
I think the
I just
thing
think they're
is
all poor.
they both have very similar profiles of how they've been winning. They've kind of had the same formula because they both have very good pitching. Again, you can say that the Royals have just been hot pitching. I think that a lot of the reason that their FIP is high and their expected FIP is high is because they've been pitching a different brand of baseball than what we've seen. Now, like if you compare it to a team like the Rays are known for pitching very up in the zone. They've kind of taken more of the old school approach. They're very low in strikeout percentage, but they're going and they're trying to get weak contact. They're first in the infield and outs above average and defensive runs saved. That's because they're putting the ball down. They're just letting the team do the work. The big thing that scares me about the Royals, and I love the Royals, even though they're like hitting all right, they can't hit besides their top three. They've got three guys with over a 600 OPS. They've a 700 OPS, sorry. Salvi's been on a tear. It seems like every other year he just goes and puts up a monster year, and it seems like that's going to hold for this year. Bobby Witt, again, Bobby Witt seems like he's just on an ascension to be a top 10 player in baseball easily and maybe even win an MVP in one of these next few years. And Pasquantino's gotten off to a slow start, and the fact that he's the third best hitter on this team that I'm talking about, he has a 737 OPS. But when you just go through the rest of this lineup, 657, 685, 661, 592, at the end of the day, it's almost similar to like what we were saying about the Mariners going into this year. The pitching, as good as the pitching's been, I don't know if it can hold up just because some guys have been pitching so well. Like, I don't think that Lugo's going to go and revert back to like a 5 ERA, but at the same time, I don't think he's going to be at a 1.7. I don't think Singer's going to do a 2.6. I really like the Royals, but guys like MJ, guys like even Pasquantino, who has a 7.37, though Hunter Renfro right now can't hit water if he fell off a boat. He has a 46 OPS. Those guys need to pan out if they want to have a chance of making the playoffs, because as good as their pitching's been, again, you can't expect Seth Lugo to keep a 1.66 because no one keeps a 1.66. So again, that's just something to keep an eye on. Transitioning from the AL Central to the AL West, again, kind of the same story. Mariners really hot. They're 8-2 over their last 10 in the AL West, and now they're first. They've kind of, we were talking about them a couple weeks ago about kind of being lost because of Luis Castillo and because of the guys, but they've kind of been on a run. I believe their last 5 starts, they've had 1 earned run in their last 5 starts, which is extremely impressive. Is this sustainable? Again, this kind of seems like the formula for them winning. Is this going to be able to go over 162? Can we see them stay in first?
I'll kind of start here. I think that it's sustainable, but in a very kind of weird way. I don't necessarily think that the pitching is going to hold up to be as dominant as it's been. I also kind of think that they've been very unlucky in terms of the hitting department, that I think just is something that really won't stay. You know, J-Rod has been, you know, maybe an average hitter at best. Jorge Polanco has been below average. Mitch Garver, J.P. Crawford have been below average. A lot of their offensive production is coming from a guy like, you know, a journeyman and Josh Rojas, or like a Dominic Canzone, you know, guys who are, you know, just kind of stepping up, and those will simmer down. But once they're, you know, the guys who make the big bucks, their heavy bats kind of really kind of begin to wake up and get back to the level what they're used to being. I think that it'll kind of balance out. So I think that it's almost an encouraging sign that they're still being able to go on these runs. They're still being able to put up these numbers with a lot of their bigger bats kind of going silent for a stretch. And I think that as they'll heat up, you know, they'll be able to kind of, you know, balance out the ship and stay pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're a bad baseball team at all. And like, well, I think what's more important than saying, are they going to keep this up, is are they going to be one of those 6 teams that's playing in October? And I do think that the answer is yes to that. There's going to be one AL Central team in the playoffs. I hope we can agree on that.
There has to be, so I would think so.
Well, no, I'm saying there's not going to be 2.
Yeah.
And I think there are at least the Yankees and Orioles are in from the AL East. I think the Rangers are in from the West. I do think the Astros will figure it out and make the playoffs, even if they're not nearly as good as they have been for the last 8 or 8 years. I do think that I can see the Mariners being that 16. And I think their pitching is going to revert back to the mean a little bit, but they're not a bad offense. I don't think they are a bad offensive team, and they really haven't been a very good offensive team this year. I mean, they're just about across the board below league average, and then out of this world as far as pitching. I think they're a good pitching team, a top 5 pitching team, and probably pretty close to a league average offensive team, and that probably gets you into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be actually a little bit more optimistic on the Mariners. I really like what the Mariners have been doing, mainly because of 2 reasons. And it's because the 2 best guys, the guys that we thought, okay, that's going to lead the Mariners, were Julio and Luis Castillo. Again, we talked about Julio a little bit, 654 OPS, not looking great. But you also look at Luis Castillo. Yes, he's had a couple good starts, but he still has a 4 ERA. I don't think any of us think that, yes, while Logan Gilbert's not going to have a 1.8 the whole year, I don't think Luis Castillo is going to have a 4.1 the whole year. And I think the big thing on that is when we look at these teams, especially how we're talking, when we're talking about the Royals and the Guardians before, I trust this 1-5, a Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, and Emerson Hancock, a lot more than a lot of rotations. So I think that of all the teams we've talked about their pitching, I think that them being at the top, like a top 5 rotation, is the most sustainable of the teams we've talked about. I think that Kirby, again, when you told me that their 2 best pitchers going into the year, Luis Castillo and George Kirby, are the 2 worst pitchers on their team right now with both having 4 ERAs, I think that, yes, while Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller aren't going to keep 2 ERAs, I wouldn't be surprised if every single guy on this roster, besides maybe Emerson Hancock, is able to stay at a 3.5, is able to stay at a 3.8. And I just because of that, and I think that Julio, it seems like, again, he woke up a little bit this week. He had a pretty good week this week. it seems like he just needs always like a month to kind of get his footing in. Kind of same thing happened last year and he blew up in the second half. I think that when everything starts working, I think that this can be a big team, especially if a team like the Astros, like we feel like we talk about them every week, but if they maybe don't get going, that's going to be a couple free wins. The A's, you know, you're going to have a couple wins there, and the Angels, you're going to have a couple wins there. If they can just, you know, get a little bit better on hitting, because you know Julio's going to come around. I don't think any of us don't think Julio's going to come around. They could very sneakily get into that one spot, especially if the Rangers keep at like this average level baseball that we've seen. Again, transitioning, and this is more on like a player specific. Wyatt Langford, first home run of the year was actually an inside the park home run. Is this more of what's to come? Is this maybe the start of him kind of like figuring it out in baseball? Or do we kind of think that he's going to be like maybe the eighth best hitter on this team and the Rangers are going to have to figure it out without him?
He's 22. I think he's going to, like, just like these conversations we're having with Holiday these last few weeks. These guys are so young. You don't see guys this young often contribute at a high level at the major league level. Do I think he's going to have a long, productive MLB career, especially at the plate? Yeah, I do. But do I think that he's going to be an above average hitter this year? No, I don't. And that's okay. And they don't need that for him to be successful. And inside the park home run is a gapper. Right, like, yeah, he hit a ball in the gap. Good work.
It's not like what we call a Reds moment.
Yeah, he's fast, and he hit a ball in the gap, and that outfield play was atrocious. And
gave me flash.
Got a home run in the box score, but it is not like he hit a moonshot. So I think that saying that is the start of something is an overreaction. But I also think that saying that he's a bust at age 22, 11 months out of college, is also a crazy thing to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, wrapping up with the AL, just look at the standings. Yankees in first, Royals in second, Red Sox in third, Blue Jays in fourth, with the Rays in the back at the fifth. AL Central, Guardians in first, Royals in second, Tigers in third, Twins in fourth, White Sox in fifth. No surprises there. AL West, we got the Mariners in first, the Rangers in second, the A's surprisingly in third, the Angels in fourth, and again, we've talked about in the last couple of weeks, the Astros rounding out the fifth, really struggling there. Transitioning to the NL East, one team that has been really knocking at the door for the last couple of years and just been always that second fiddle in the NL East has been the Phillies. But the Phillies have been doing great. I believe they're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They're top 10 in both runs scored and allowed. And they're 1.5 games out to a Braves team who, again, just lost to the – who did I just say they lost to? Guardians. So the Guardians this week. Is it crazy to think that this may be the year that the Phillies are first in the NL East?
Yes.
My bad. You want to chime in and just
– So it's one of the teams where if – the top guys continue playing like they're top guys, they can compete with basically anybody. The problem in, I feel like this has just kind of plagued them for a while now. It's just the depth. I mean, the pitching staff right now, obviously Wheeler's been great. Ranger Suarez has been great. He's actually carved out a pretty solid career these past couple of years. Nola just kind of needs to get back to what he was. Beyond then, it's just, it's not the rotation. The bullpens are okay, but they're not anything that you know, it's not something that's going to hold up for an 162 game season. Offensively, you know, you got like a, you know, Trey Turner's been great. Bryce has been, you know, not Bryce, but he's been really good still. You're going to need, you know, Nick Castellanos to be anything better than the worst player in Major League Baseball if, you know, you want to kind of turn this into a sustainable ship. But just even looking at kind of the distribution of guys getting playing time, it's the top guys and then it's nobody. And I feel like if when you're talking about teams that are going to win a division over an 162 game sample size, that in a, you know, when you're guaranteed to have guys have injuries, especially guys with injury histories like Harper, like Schwarber, like Castellanos, once one of these guys goes down and they, you know, it's just kind of the nature of the sport, you're going to need somebody to step up. And I haven't seen enough to where I'm feel confident that that's going to happen. So I don't think that they'll hold on, but if they get some strokes of luck, they can go as far as they possibly can.
Yeah, the thing about me with this Phillies as opposed to other years is this isn't a start that they usually get on. I think the biggest thing that the narrative of the Phillies has been they're going to play 500 baseball for the first half of the year. They're going to get better baseball post All-Star break. They're going to get that second spot. And then their team's built for October. The thing that sticks out to me is that they're playing good baseball right now. And this isn't the typical thing we've seen with the Phillies. The whole first, I would say that this has been what we've expected every year going into how they've played. Every single year, we expect them to be in second place. We expect them to be one of the best teams in baseball. And then they always disappoint. And then we have the discussions of, oh, how are they going to be? And then they heat up post All-Star break. And then they get into the playoffs as a wild card. And then they go and they're just a thorn in the Braves' side. This year, though, again, they're almost 10 games over 500. I think that if they can, I think that this is continuable because for the simple reason of we've seen them play really good baseball for long stretches going into October. So, and this has been the expectation that we've seen. And going into the year, this is what we always expect. And then they always peter out. So, again, I think that this isn't really just an outlier. I think this is more towards what we've kind of expected from them from the last 3 years. So, again, we're talking about a team like the Braves. So it's very hard to say that they're going to end up in first, especially since they're not even in first right now. But I wouldn't be surprised if they can keep this going for 162 and they win some key games against the Braves that we're sitting here and it's like, wow, for the first time in a while, the Braves are in the wild card and they have to go to the Phillies. You're going to have to play three or four games in Citizens Bank. And I think that's going to be very ugly for them. Transitioning to the NL Central, we've kind of got a battle up top. It kind of gets spread a little with the Cubs and the Brewers because, you know, the Cubs dropped two of three to the Red Sox this weekend on a walk-off by Tyler O'Neill. But again, still half a game out. Brewers are playing great baseball. Cubs are playing great baseball. Everyone else in the division is kind of around a game or two above 500, a game or two below 500. But really, it seems like those two have kind of separated themselves from the rest. How are we feeling about the NL Central? I know, Harry, you're a Reds fan. Lucas, you're not a Reds fan at all. But again, how do we feel about the Brewers and Cubs? If you had to pick one team, who'd you go with?
I want to say the Cubs very badly because I'm kind of sick of the Brewers just kind of, sleepwalking their way into, a top spot in the division. But they've done really well considering that they offloaded Corbin Burns from a team that was known to be exclusively pitching heavy and couldn't hit the baseball, and they've suddenly figured out how to hit the baseball. And, like Christian Yelich is in prime form. I know I think I might be glitching out. I don't know how bad the audio is,
You're good,
but
you're good.
Christian Yelich is in prime form. Contreras has been fantastic. Even the pitching, like it's just been really solid, and it's just such a well-oiled organization. It feels very Brewersy in the sense of it doesn't really make sense why they're as good as they are and why they've been as sustainable as they are. But they can just find new pieces and add them to add them to the system, add them to the culture, and they just perfectly fit. And that's exactly kind of what they've been doing. The only thing that I think I think Jackson Chourio is just kind of the X factor here. I thought he would be kind of the next kind of Corbin Carroll in his rookie season. He has not been that. If he is anywhere near has anywhere near that level of production, I think that they're going to be just an absolute force to be reckoned with down the stretch. That said, the rest of their bats have been on fire. We'll see how long that lasts, but I like the Brewers here.
Lucas.
Yeah, I think they're a good team, but I think both teams are probably 87-ish win teams. I don't think that they're either team is going to be a force that runs away with it and wins 92, 95 games, which is why I think that the Reds and even maybe the Pirates and Cardinals are going to feel that they can hang around into August and September, and there aren't going to be easy games in this division. Because I mean, really, there never are in the NL Central. None of these teams like each other. They're always going to be playing hard against each other. And the Brewers as a team are not going to hit 260 the whole year. And Gary Sanchez is not going to be hitting opposite field home runs off of Aroldis Chapman on, I think that's probably the nastiest pitch I've ever seen hit for a home run. Shoulder high in the other batter's box. And he just, I mean, he looked like 2017 Gary Sanchez doing that. The Brewers are going to come down to earth. The Cubs are going to, I think, be pretty similar to what they are now. And I do see scenarios in which the Reds or the Pirates could get hot and make this really murky as a division. I don't think it's that dissimilar from the AL Central. In fact, that there's no standout team, and there are a couple teams that really think that they can play.
Yeah, I think the big thing, and this will kind of muddle our two topics for the NL Central and the one, is I feel like every single team in this division has a player that's really going to determine if they have a shot at first place. Because again, we said it, every single team, I mean, last place for the Cardinals is 4.5 games out. And yes, we're early. But again, they're only 13 and 15, whereas the Brewers are 17 and 10. So again, that's something that could be caught up in a week. If you someone team plays hot baseball. Again, you said it, the Brewers, Jackson Chourio, what's he gonna be? Especially with Yelich on the IL. We don't know how long that's gonna be. The Cubs, again, Shota's been great, but the rest of the rotation has not been. Again, Kyle Hendricks has like a 12 ERA. Don't think that's gonna obviously stand at a 12. But if Shota's the only guy in that rotation that's doing well, they're gonna be in trouble. Cause again, I don't know if their hitting can sustain what it's been. The Reds, we're gonna get to them now. Ellie. Been on an absolute tear. We're going to talk about it. Can Ellie just literally carry this young core to be a first place team? The Pirates, again, Jared Jones has looked great. But again, July, we may get a call up from Paul Skenes. He was in Omaha watching Dylan play against Creighton. Him and Livy Dunn kind of watched a couple games. I think they saw some good Georgetown baseball. But again, if we have a tandem of three-way of Mitch Keller, Jared Jones, and Paul Skenes, that can look great going into August, especially if they can stay in contention. And in the Cardinals are 2 games under 500, and Goldie has not looked like Goldie. Goldie has like a 600 OPS. He's looked terrible. Arenado's been an average hitter, and they can't hit. And the big thing about this team was going to be going into here, if they were successful, it's going to be that you have Arenado and you have Goldschmidt, and you have a couple guys that you trust, like Nolan Gorman and Jordan Walker's maybe coming. He got sent down. But again, we weren't expecting the offense to be this bad. So I think the big thing about the Central is they all have recipes of how they can be in first place. But again, going back, Reds, Harry, I know you want to talk about them. How good's Ellie been lately?
I mean, excuse me, I'm having a very bad cough right now. Ellie is, my goodness, Ellie's my favorite player. Oh
I
my
get you.
God.
I got you. Don't worry. You get the cough though. Ellie, again, has just been nothing short of electric. I think that there was a big conversation, which I think was a valid conversation, of talking about what Ellie was going to be this year. Because the big thing of what Ellie's year was, what it was a good month stretch of him being amazing. And then it was the rest of the season, he was just not a very good baseball player. And I think in a lot of people's minds, they either went one of two ways. Either went, he was terrible the rest of the year, so the guy's going to be a bust, which again, the guy's freaking 20 years old. You shouldn't be saying that. Or that 1 month was he was amazing. That 1 month, he's going to be amazing for the rest of his career. But again, that latter one seems to be true, meaning for the start of the year, has a 987 OPS, has 7 bombs, 12 stolen bases. He really looks like he's going to be the future of this franchise. Lucas, your thoughts on the Reds and your thoughts on Ellie?
The Reds are exciting. Ellie is probably right now the most exciting player in baseball. Bobby, I probably Witt and Ellie are probably one and two. But he, I think he's going to start striking out even more than he is. And he's striking out too much. He's going to, like, certain things that are going right for him right now are going to stop going right. And when you, again, when you have a guy that's 22 years old that you're counting on to be your guy, I don't think that's a sustainable recipe for success. You were talking about Jackson Chourio being the X factor for the Brewers. He's 20. We were talking about Wyatt Langford. A lot of people have been talking about Jackson Holliday. You're talking about Paul Skenes. Putting all of your eggs in that basket of guys who should be in college, who should be taking finals, who should be like living in dorm rooms. It's risky. And on the other hand, talk about the Cardinals with their retirement home going on, Goldschmidt not looking himself, Arenado not being the superstar he's been for the last decade plus. When you're 35, 36, you start to slow down. You're not the same player you once were. And I think that you got to be aware of the fact that you look for players and teams with a lot of players in their primes that are going to be the ones sustainably and consistently doing things right. You see it with the Braves, a lot of guys in their late 20s. See what the Dodgers, a lot of guys in that late 20s, early 30s range. And you see these inconsistent teams that are exciting, or you think could be frisky and do something. And they're the ones with the 22-year-olds or the 36-year-olds running their show. And I don't think it's the right approach to build a team or to talk about winners like that. You gotta have guys in their prime.
You good, Harry?
Okay, I'm alive now. The Reds shouldn't be viewed as a team that's going to contend for it all this year. I think the approach has very much been build a nucleus and kind of grow around then so that in a couple years' time, you'll be a really, really good team. with Ellie, we're kind of seeing, you know, as Lucas just kind of talked about, it's two completely different opposites here. You're going to have games where Ellie goes 5 for 5 with a cycle and 4 stolen bases, and you're going to look at him and say, this is the greatest player I've ever seen. And then he's going to go 0 for 5 with 4 Ks. And I mean, we've even seen that this season. He's been incredible to start the season. And then against the Rangers, he went, I forget, I watched the game the other day, he was like 0 for 5, I think exactly with 4 Ks. And he's going to win you games. And sometimes he's maybe not going to lose you games, but he's going to be pretty much a black hole. Thus far in the season, he's been much, much, much more of a positive force than a negative one. And I still think that he is, in terms of his long-term prospects, one of the, you know, most kind of intriguing options that all of baseball has to offer. I think that just kind of in the long term, it's being able to maintain the highs and, you know, decrease and, you know, make the lows a bit more infrequent. And he's done that this season. I wouldn't say he's all the way there yet. I still think he has more kind of development to go. Especially in terms of just kind of slashing that K rate. But, you know, it's just a guy that, you know, you just have to sit and marvel when he plays baseball. And, you know, just going forward, obviously, we're all super excited as Reds fans to be able to watch him grow.
Yeah. He's so toolsy. He has, I mean, almost unlimited potential, but he's got a whiff percentage that's in the bottom 10 percentile in baseball. And I don't think you can really be considered a guy that's going to carry your team night in and night out when you're swinging and missing 35% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the problem just kind of with the central, both central divisions, are that because there's a lack of a clear contender, every team here, and the Reds are included, and the Reds have been included the past couple of years, in that you get baited into thinking that you're a better team than you are because you're closer to, you know, the NL Central title, especially for a team that's been so desperate. That you'll be buyers the deadline or something like that. And it's just like, that's not the way to go because you're not even close to being a national champ or not a national champ. You're in, you know, a World Series contender. But just kind of the central basically being the MLB's form of skill-based matchmaking, it just makes it so like the Reds are now almost thrust into a position where you have Ellie as the superstar you have to build around right now. And it's just like, it's something that's just not going to work, you know, come July, come August, when he inevitably kind of cools down a little bit, but still, like, long-term, incredible. Love him.
Yeah. Transitioning to the NL West, again, no surprises from what we thought. Dodgers are in first. We had problems with them last week, but again, they just decided to win, like, 6 straight this week, and then they lost one today. But looking at the second, third, and fourth, we've got 3 teams that really have not been playing great ball. They've been playing ball. Giants at 14 and 15, Padres at 14 and 17, and Arizona at 13 and 16. All of them haven't looked great, haven't looked good at all. If you had to buy the stock of one of these teams and explain to me why they're going to be good and why they're going to turn it around, I have a feeling who I know who Lucas is going to go with. So I'll start with you. Which one of these teams are you taking? Explain to me, Lucas, why the Giants are your pick.
I'll say, yeah, the Giants are my pick. But if I had a second pick, it'd be the Diamondbacks. I think the Padres are directionless. I don't think that front office or ownership is entirely sure how they want to go about this with their core really kind of aging and losing pieces, losing Soto, not good. Losing Snell, even though he's been god-awful and is now on the IL for us, not good. The Diamondbacks were in the World Series 7 months ago as an 84-win team. Corbin Carroll has not looked like Corbin Carroll. I don't know what is wrong with him, but he now looks to be a slap hitter who steals bases rather than the guy that we thought was going to be a perennial 30-30, 40-40 guy. And I think you look at the Giants offseason, You look at all the guys they picked up. You look at all the pieces and the way that things have looked. You got a new manager in there. You got a really, really good rotation waiting in the coffers. I think that it's going to be hard for that team to not just start winning baseball games. There are too many good pieces and good players. They're going to play good defense. Healthy, you have a rotation with the 1 and 2 in the NL Cy Young Award race last year in Snell and Webb. You have Robbie Ray, who was a Cy Young Award winner 3 years ago.
Yep.
But Alex Cobb, who was an all-star last year. You've got the number one left-handed pitching prospect in baseball in Kyle Harrison, who's actually looked really good to start the year, even though the fastball hasn't been what people thought it might be. And then you have the guy who's been the best of the group so far this year, Jordan Hicks, who's gone from throwing 103 in the Cardinals bullpen to throwing 98 and just churning out six inning, one run allowed starts. That, if you have that much pitching depth and quality, if you put any sort of defense and offense behind that, with Camilo Doval coming out and just throwing absolute gas in the ninth inning, you're going to win 86, 87 baseball games.
Harry, what do you think?
I'll kind of go for the black swan here. I'll take the Padres. I agree that in terms of the long-term prospects of the organization, it is, has, and probably always will be just a nightmare in that they don't necessarily know what their long-term plan is. That said, when you have a team, and I know we've kind of said this for a while now, but I'm always somebody who kind of just likes to believe in talent. Especially in that, you know, it's not only you have your top stars, your Manny Machados, your Fernando Tatises, but you also have just guys who over kind of the previous couple of years have stepped up and become things that, you know, we didn't necessarily expect that they would be. Your Ha-Seong Kims, Jerickson Profar has been great. Same with Jackson Merrill. The pitching is shaky. Dylan Cease is great. Yu Darvish has been, and the rest of the pitching is there's not a whole lot of depth there, you know, kind of on the contrast with Lucas and talking about the Giants. Xander Bogaerts, hopefully he remembers actually how to play the game of baseball sometime soon. That would be
Hey,
well
hey,
appreciated.
hey,
Oh, he was, oh,
not
he's
my
great with the
guy.
Red Sox.
Not my
Padres,
guy.
Bogaerts. Maybe Boston was the reason by it.
You should.
But just, you know, we saw it last year, you know, kind of in the home stretch. They obviously kind of dug themselves into too much of a hole early on, but you know, they have the guys. It's a matter of can they turn it on? You know, time will tell, and time hasn't been too favorable to them, but I kind of just kind of will give them the benefit of the doubt there. And the Diamondbacks have just kind of generally out on, you know, I think that the World Series hangover fluke is very much a thing, especially for a team that very much kind of overperformed. And I don't necessarily think the talent lined up with them, and you know, a lot of things went right for them. Giants, I like. But I don't want to be boring, so I'm going Padres.
You
Sue
talk
me.
about Tatis and Machado being superstars. Are they superstars anymore? Tatis
Yes.
had a 770 OPS last year. Again this year, I don't think he is the player we saw in 2020 and 2021. Machado last year,
2019.
780 OPS,
2019.
700 this year.
2017.
I don't know if you can call those guys some of the best players in the game anymore. I don't know if they're that good.
I think it's early, and I
I
think
think with Tatis, it's not a question
again,
anymore.
Tatis. I think the thing with Tatis is, I think both of them. I think the same way. You got to go until at least the end of this year before you start doing opinions. Because at the end of the day, I think both of them, they have
Tatis
the
been good
tools
too.
that they can go and they can just end up with an 870 OPS. And I think none of us will be surprised again. But I'm gonna talk a little bit about the Diamondbacks. You talked to them a little bit, Lucas. The big thing that I like about the Diamondbacks is that I think their pitching can come around. I think that we've seen flashes of Pha in October, and I'm not even going to talk about him. Again, Gallen, I think, is a great pitcher. I think he's an ace. I think that he's not going to be at a 3-4 the whole year. I really think that he's going to have a sub-3 ERA. And again, that half a run to people may not mean anything, but to me, it's going to mean a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up with a 2-8 ERA because we've seen, again, not to talk about like guys like Julio again, but like Gallen has tend to have sometimes a little bit of a slow start. Again, really when he had his ascension, when we were starting to talk about him as an ace, it was really backed up by him just having that phenomenal second half 2 years ago. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if they get going. Again, we talked a little bit about Corbin Carroll. I think he's going to get going. I don't think the 590 OPS is what he's going to end the year with. The big guy I want to talk about is the one Boris guy who seems to be playing well right now, Jordan Montgomery. Jordan Montgomery, again, there were a lot of scares, especially because the guy on your end, Blake Snell, coming down with the injury, and it seems like it's really affected him, like the not having a spring training. Jordan Montgomery hasn't seemed to affect. He has a 2.70 ERA. He's pitching great. He's looked very good. He looks like he hasn't missed a step from October with the Rangers. So again, if Merrill Kelly, especially him with the 2.2 ERA, not gonna last, but if he can be that solid number three, Monty be that number two, and Gallen again continue to be that true ace that he was last year and the year before, I think that they can turn it around. But again, wrapping up now, looking at the standings, no surprise, NL East, you've got the Braves in first, Phillies in second, Mets in third. Dylan's not on the podcast, so I was like, for sure, we're not talking about the Mets. Thank God. Nationals in fourth, and then my terrible Marlins in fifth. Screw them. Then we got the Brewers in first in the Central, followed by the Cubs, Reds, Pirates, and Cardinals. And then in the West, we have the Dodgers, Giants, Padres, Diamondbacks, and the Rockies just sitting there at 7-21.
I've got a
Again,
couple.
going now to our favorite topic, our favorite edition. We got our players of the week. Again, told you guys at the beginning of the show to think about them. Who do we have? Who is the guy that you want to highlight this week? Lucas, I think you told me a little bit before. I know who you're going to talk about.
I want to highlight Jordan Hicks. He has now started five games. He has gone five, six, or seven innings in all of them. He has only allowed more than one earned run in one start. And in that start, he allowed two. There were a lot of questions about him being a starter because the last time I chatted with the Cardinals, I believe he made nine starts and had a six something ERA. He's not going to have a, what does he have now? I think he's got a 1.59 ERA. He's
Yeah.
not going to have a 1.59 in 2024. But he's a legit starter, throwing 98. Being efficient with his pitch count, going deep into games, I think he could be an all-star. And I think that he could be a really, really the part of a really, really good rotation with a lot of proven guys for this Giants team.
Harry, who do you have?
Yeah, I also kind of hinted at it a little earlier in this episode, but I got Gunnar Henderson. This past week, I think he had what, three bombs. Obviously, kind of looking at your OPS is a pretty poor accuracy of performance in a singles week worth of sample data, but it's like a 1200 OPS this past week. Overall, this season he's been fantastic. He looks to really kind of be taking that leap like we all thought he would. Hopefully he can just kind of be the next one of these baby Oriole superstars, that can really kind of transcend an organization that has, for the better part of the decade, just kind of spent the division in the cellar, and now they just kind of look like a force to be reckoned with here. And this past week has been fantastic, but the entire season has been fantastic up to this point. And I think that he really has found a new switch, and he's my player of the week for sure. And he's definitely a guy to kind of look at in this new upper echelon of MLB talent, going forward.
Yeah, I hinted at mine a little bit because I wanted to talk about him in a whole topic, but I feel like I have to talk about how Tyler O'Neill is just keeping the Red Sox afloat. I mean, they've been just riddled by the injury bug, and that's one big reason of why their offense hasn't been what we expected, even though they've had a lot. Again, Devers hasn't been what we really wanted him to be at the start of the year. But Tyler O'Neill has been an amazing acquisition. The guy has a 1200 OPS, had two bombs this weekend, and I don't know if you guys saw the reaction that Shota had on the bomb that he hit off of him. He went and he was like, just had a shock of like, wow, he murdered that ball. And again, he's just been the only reason that the Red Sox have stayed afloat. Because other than the pitching from an offensive side, if Tyler O'Neill was not in the lineup this year, I don't care how good our pitching has been, we would be last place in the AL East because it's so easy to be last place. So Tyler O'Neill, again, I feel like I'm going to give you my flowers this whole year. And I wish that you stay forever, you Canadian freak. I love you. Just keep doing this, bro. And I hope you're a Red Sox forever. Going now,
get a
I'm going to
broom.
Give you guys the one to think about if you can think one that comes off of your head. But I got – it's our HK player of the week who's been awful. And I don't want to highlight a player. I want to highlight a team. And I want to highlight the fans of this team as well. The Miami Marlins really pissed me off. I don't know if you guys saw today. They started the game 6-0, and it was looking phenomenal. And, you know, Jazz Chisholm had a grand slam, got me nice. He was on my fantasy team. And then, of course, the social media team went and tweeted it. They were like, yeah, we're up 6-0. We're just going to tweet it and jinx everything. So, again, classic Marlins fan was like, we're going to lose this in the fifth. Fast forward to the fifth inning, we're down 10-6. And it would end up we would lose 11-7. I think the Marlins as a whole, just this whole season, have just been a pitiful disaster since November. From Skip Schumacher after making the playoffs in his first year, them eliminating his options, so he's going to be a free agent next year. Just it feels like every single step this organization has made has been a bad decision. From Max Meyer getting called down, just every single part of them has been terrible. And I think it starts from the top. And I think this was just, you know, the cherry on top of what's been a terrible start to the year. Just scoring 6 runs, having your social media team post, oh, what happened? They put hi, I think, on their Twitter, like hi, and it was up 6-0. And then not even half the game later, you went and you lost that lead. I think it's just exactly what you hate to see out of a baseball organization. Again, wrapping up, love you guys having on. Thank you, Lucas, for coming on. Harry, thank you for coming on. I know it was last minute. Thank you, Dylan, for being away so that I had to go and prep for all this. It was very nerve-wracking. I didn't want to have to do the intro. I'm not going to lie. I messed up the music like 4 times before we got on. But we figured it out. Thank you, boys, for coming on. Got anything else?
Thank you, Dylan, for the short side retired meeting this week.
Love to see it. Lucas, anything?
Thanks for having me.
Of course, baby. Now, that's all. And as you say, the side is retired.